Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello everyone, I'm Chris Wynn and welcome to the Rocker Report podcast in association with the Sunderland Community Soup Kitchen, where we once again look ahead to our next League One fixture of the season, where we take on Rotherham United at the New York Stadium as we look to bounce back from our first home defeat of the season last Saturday. So to bring us up to speed with all the latest in South Yorkshire, we're very pleased to have the company of the official Rotherham United commentator, Matt Goodwin. Hello Matt.
Hiya mate, thanks for having me on, such a pleasure.
Yeah, is that the right term, the official Rotherham United? I couldn't think of a different term.
Yeah, right? He's probably giving him a bit too much credit, to be honest. But yeah, if you like, for the iFollow service, so I cover home games and some of the away games as well.
Yeah, so we've got our own commentary team. So I didn't know what term to use, whether that was the right one.
No, that's why I've been called a lot worse. on Twitter. I get called a lot worse on Twitter.
Yeah, and before we get started, because we were talking before we came on, and I was saying that, you know, normally we get fans of the clubs that we talk about, or sometimes we get the owners of the club we're talking about, and sometimes, you know, fans of clubs, we don't always, it's hard to look objectively, but you're not strictly a fan of Rotherham, you're a kind of a Barnsley fan. So, I mean, how did you get into kind of being the official commentator of Rotherham?
Yeah, I think I'm going to lose a few Rotherham United followers now on Twitter now. It's officially revealed, but it's quite strange, really. You'll know, living down in this area, that there's quite a cross section, isn't there? Of like, you know, Blades, Owls. You've got Donny Rovers, Barnsley, Rotherham, Leeds just up the road, then Chesterfield down the road as well. So it's quite a hotbed, isn't it, for like football in this area? There's a lot going on, but my dad being from Barnsley. You know, he dragged us to Oakwell. I tried my best to support Tottenham as a kid, but he did drag me to Oakwell in mid-90s. He were going in, you know, early 80s himself. My dad, when he worked shifts on a Saturday, and he used to work at Millmore as a bobby, sometimes he'd be on match day duties. So when Barnsley were away, he'd try and get his shifts to be, you know, so that we could go to home games with Barnsley. Then away games, me and my brother would be kicking his heels, too young to go to away games, and we'd get his dad to let us in. I might be getting him in some trouble now. It's a good job he's retired. He'd let us in to Tivoli End. So we'd go watch Rotherham. And I've got friends who are Rotherham fans as well. So I do have a soft spot for Rotherham, of course I do, and being involved with the club and knowing everything that they stand for, you know, from the chairman through to the manager and all the staff. You know, it is a unique club, and I am really proud to be involved with it. But yeah, guilty. I am a Barnsley fan, but at least at the minute, Rotherham are giving me some sort of positivity to shout about. And I got involved with them. Maybe I think it's coming up to about 5 years I think I've been doing it. One of my first. The pre-season game was actually Sunderland when David Moyes was not yet officially announced as manager. And my mate Matt, who was the press officer then, he got me involved because I started out my career, so to speak, in broadcasting on Barnsley's iFollow service back in the day when it were Barnsley World in its one of its other guises. So yeah, that's pretty much that.
Heady days for Sunderland fans before David Moyes took over, because That's where it all went wrong. But yeah, I mean, I was gonna say because I mean, I live in South Yorkshire. I live kind of between Rotherham and Sheffield, and it is a strange one because obviously the two Sheffield clubs hate each other. Everyone seems to hate Leeds, but the clubs like Barnsley and Rotherham, because I might upset a few people maybe, but they're smaller cousins in a way, and they were always traditionally in the lower leagues. Mm. It seems like people have got a softer spot for those. For the kind of smaller clubs in Yorkshire?
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Because, like, there's a north-south divide as well, isn't there? And then there's, like, a Yorkshire-Lancashire divide. And then there's a Yorkshire divide within all that. Like, it just breaks down in so many different ways. But generally, I think we sort of want each other to do well. We've had, you know, we had Rotherham fans collecting... we're Barnsley fans collecting for Rotherham United when Rotherham were in administration in 2005. And they were collecting at Sheffield Wednesday as well, outside Hillsborough, with buckets. So I think we do want each other to do well. There's a lot of fans think that the local press don't want, you know, certain clubs to do well, like Radio Sheffield covering all the clubs. Believe me, Radio Sheffield want all the clubs in Yorkshire to do well. They want to be going to the elite stadia across the country. They don't want to be going... to National League, where there's no ISDN port and you get no pie at half time. So, but yeah, obviously there's some, there's fierce sort of rivalries between certainly, you know, the Blades and the Owls. Donny and Rotherham's a big one as well. Barnsley Sheffield Wednesday probably means a bit more to Barnsley than the Owls, but. Historically speaking, there's a bit of sort of modern history rivalry between Barnsley and Rotherham because they were vying for promotion from the old third division into the second division back in early 80s. But we are quite lucky, really. We've got quite a lot of clubs on our doorstep, and you know, as a football fan, you do really want to see them doing well, apart from when they come up against your side.
Yeah, well, exactly. Like I said, living down here, you kind of it's a weird one because. I grew up Sunderland, Newcastle, and you just hate them, and there's nothing else. But down here, everyone's got it. Well, obviously, apart from the two Sheffield clubs, but everyone else got a soft spot for each other, except, like I said, except Leeds, where everyone hates Leeds outside of Leeds. But before we get into all things kind of Rotherham, just touch on Barnsley. But you're an associate producer on a documentary film called Daydream Believers that was released in 2018, which was a film about Barnsley's promotion to the Premier League in the 90s. So this was back in 2018. I was lucky enough to be kind of given a link to be able to watch it before it was released so I could write a review on our website, which I did. And I absolutely loved the documentary, absolutely fascinating. Reminded us a little bit of kind of Premier Passions back in the day, but more after the fact. And I wrote, you know, in the review about all the parallels on and off the pitch between Sunderland, Barnsley, and our promotion under Peter Reid in the 90s around the same time. I think it was the season before you went up. I think you replaced us in the Premier League, actually. Mm. But brought back good memories for me. But can you tell us a bit about, you know, how you got involved in that, how the idea got off the ground and kind of how you got it rolling?
Yeah, well, my mate Chris is a freelance cameraman and... he were always toying with the idea of doing like a film. He wanted to tell the story about Barnsley getting promoted to Premier League. Initially, he wanted to do like a docudrama where it had like a father and a son, like the relationship between them. I seem to remember him talking to me about that once. But then he got it went quiet for a couple of years, and then he got involved with. Liam Dyson, who was part of the West Ham Bogs fanzine, which were really successful and revered fanzine about Barnsley and the famous West Ham Bogs. But we'll not talk about the West Stand today. People are still hurting about that. And Liam's good at getting things done. He's a good like project manager, so to speak. And, you know, they were a good sort of hybrid, really, those two. And Chris had done me a lot of favours coming down to Oakwell and filming, and we'd had a couple of legends on camera together, we've been mates since, I think, 2007, 2008. And then he asked me to get involved, and, you know, being a big fan of Barnsley and having a season ticket in the Premier League as well that season, I couldn't really say no. And I were lucky enough to, like, you know, interview a couple of the players, and went to Holland to interview Ariane de Zoo, probably more famous for being with Pompey to Sunderland fans at his time with Barnsley, but it was Barnsley who brought him to England. And we interviewed Jan Agerfjordtoft as well. And, you know, I think what it was is that it was a special time in football, I think, because it was just like on the brink. Yeah, the Premier League, it were established, you know, for 4 or 5 years, but it was just on that brink when it were about to really explode. I mean, Chelsea got the full, like, you know, the Italian contingent, hadn't they? And, you know, there were some superstar players. We just had Euro 96. I think that really piqued everyone's interest, really, in football generally. It was just like the sort of perfect storm, really, for Barnsley. And Danny Wilson, you know, putting this team together. It were only a few years after the miners' strike. If you're thinking 84, they were still suffering, you know, the effects on the gates. You know, the football club suffered because of the effects of what Margaret Thatcher's government had done. But we felt that the club gave people that bit of hope and that bit of belief that, you know, no matter what people say or do, you can always sort of prove them wrong. And I think Barnsley's really epitomised that in that season in 96-97.
Yeah, like you said, and I think maybe because I was at that age, but 90s football, you know, if you get me on that subject, we could probably go on about it all that. But we'll dig out the review that I wrote for that, and we'll get the links out and stuff. We'll push it with this podcast, because like I said, it was I really enjoyed watching it. But I noticed on your kind of on your Twitter feed, you've got it, I think you've got it pinned, haven't you, or you've got it in your bio, I think.
Yeah.
But it's one of those timeless pieces. So I mean, I assume kind of you're periodically pushing it and it's still selling.
Yeah, I think you know, we've still got us little group message flowing between all the lads that were involved in it, and we keep talking, and we're always quoting like lines from the film, you know, basically creating his own memes and stuff that are relevant to, you know, contemporary politics or whatever. And we have messaged back and forth recently, just a couple of whispers about the 25th anniversary of the promotion, so hopefully we can get a screening on of that in April next year. So that'd be great. Mm-hmm. But I just feel that, and I know I'm really biased, but it's not the, you know, money doesn't matter documentary series that, you know, that's had millions chucked at it by, you know, big companies, because we were a crowdfunder and all the profits went to charity as well. I think around about 40 grand went to Tiny Arts Appeal at Barnsley Hospital. And, you know, that's not having a dig at Amazon or whatever. It's just the reality of it. And we were really proud, actually, because we all went as a group to Berlin to the football film festival in Berlin a couple of years ago. And it was crazy because you had, like, Aardman Studios, who do, you know, like Wallace and Gromit, and I think it was Early Man, the football film, and you got Universal Pictures and Amazon, and then it was like, you know, few chunky lads from Barnsley rocking up to Berlin. It was class, but we are proud that it is like a unique story, really. I don't think it'll happen again. Yeah, you've had your Bournemouths and Brentford are maybe an exception, you know, Bournemouth had a lot of money behind them. I think Barnsley's probably spent about £1 million going into that season. Maybe not even that. And the fact that they actually got relegated at the end, it wouldn't have been a story if they'd have stayed up. We probably wouldn't have made it. Obviously, I wish we would have, but a lot of things, as you'll have seen in the film, sort of conspired against them. And, you know, Shakespeare did write a lot of tragedies, though, that were a success. And it is a bit tragic.
And non based in South Yorkshire, so you might as well do one, you know. So,
well, yeah, if you're, you know, the discerning football fan, I think will enjoy it generally. There is the political backdrop to it as well, which I think will appeal. But Now, if you've got any contacts at Netflix, if they want to chuck it on, tell them to give us a buzz.
Yeah, but it is brilliant. So I thought I wanted to catch up with you about that. But yeah, so we'll get on to Rotherham. So we'll move from Barnsley. We'll get on to Rotherham, and I was looking at Rotherham over recent years, and you know, start of the decade, they had that sudden rise from League Two to the Championship. Mm. I think it was from 2012 to 2014, they suddenly kind of bounced up the leagues, and then they spent a few years in the Championship, which was quite an achievement, especially when I was looking how many managers they went through during that time. And then kind of Paul Warne took the job on in 2016. And since then, they've literally been a yo-yo club going up and back down between the Championship and League One. So, I mean, in that time, because the last 5 years, it's literally been up, down, relegation, promotion. Have they just struggled to get it right in preparing for the Championship when they get there? Or is it kind of just a case of that's where the club is in terms of the size and the budget that they've got?
Yeah, I think that's fair. You know, when you're talking about budget and you just look at some of the teams in the Championship, it's quite ridiculous, really. You've even got fully-fledged internationals at this level, you know, in the third tier. And the famous ex-Barnsley boss who said about 10 years ago that the Championship is a Premier League 2. And as much as I hate to agree with him, I think that's true. you know, I remember Rotherham getting gazumped by a team below them in the league. I don't want to go into specifics, over a loan striker. And Rotherham were probably third bottom at the time. And they just got absolutely blown out of the water. But it is a difficult one because you look at some of the wages that these players are on. They're absolutely astronomical. And there's absolutely no way that the owner who brought the club back to Rotherham, because if Sunderland fans don't know, you know, they were playing at Don Valley Stadium in Sheffield. And they were pretty dark times. Really low gates. You know, it didn't hold an atmosphere. You know, a lot of fans quite disillusioned. And there's no way that Tony Stewart is going to risk the future of the club. And absolutely rightly so. And the manager as well, in Paul Warne, saying when he took over, the club were in, well, the team, not the club, the team were in disarray after the Alan Stubbs tenure. It were a difficult one because as a manager, you should never take on your own fans at all. You know they are the lifeblood of the club, and I don't think he endeared himself to the Millers fans. So when Paul Warne took over, from what I understand, there were, you know, players just not really trying in training and, you know, going home as soon as they could and not interested. And he transformed that when he took over. And he didn't really want the gig as well because he was it's still like a running joke that he was just a fitness coach, and he was at the time. And he's really stamped his mark on the club. And he is a Rotherham legend because, despite being a Norfolk lad, and I suppose you could compare it to like your Kevin Ball, Sunderland, like, you know, not being from the area, geographically, but you know, really heart on your sleeve, and 100% graft every week, no matter what. That's what Warnie were like as a player, and that's what he demands from his players as well. So when they have got up into the Championship, it was the first time of asking under Paul Warnie's first season. Remarkable achievement to get up via the playoffs. And I think that season back in the Champ, they just didn't get that goal scorer in. The goals just cost them. And they were really close as well. They were really close to staying up. But there were times when you were looking at, you know, when you look at the squad list and you look at the opposition team and you're looking at their bench, you're thinking, international, 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 you know, 500 Premier League games. And you're thinking, crikey, this is bonkers. And, you know, like Stoke had Bojan and Peter Crouch coming on and, you know, they were Grealish for Aston Villa. And you're thinking, this is just absolutely bonkers. But, you know, I think it's safe to say in every game that under Paul Warne in the Championship, the opposition knew that they'd been in a game. They really did know that they'd been in a game. And he kind of gets... It's a bizarre one, this, because he sort of gets beaten with this weird stick that he likes good human beings and he's a good bloke himself, which I think, why is that a bad thing? You know, he doesn't want these players, he doesn't want these bad eggs that aren't going to be bothered, that aren't going to want to better themselves or come for one last pay packet. He don't want that. I think, you know, as a Sunderland fan, you'll know full well what that's like. Probably on a different level with a few more zeros on the end of the pay packet, but very, very sort of similar. And I think, you know, generally, he's a very well-respected Paul Warner. He's certainly one of the reasons that I have sort of continued doing what I do and working on match days for Rotherham, because it's such an enjoyable, you know, atmosphere where he just wants everyone to be the best that they can be.
Well, I think you've touched on some of it there, actually, because I was thinking, you know, as you were talking, from the outside looking in, you know, despite, you know, if you look on just season after season, up and down kind of nature of promotion or relegation for the past five seasons. If you think about that, you think almost like a club in turmoil, you know, jumping up and down all the time. But, you know, it's coming up to 5 years since Paul Warren was appointed as manager. Kind of like you said, it's been a while. It seems like a solid, well-run club that they can bounce back quickly from dropping out of the Championship. I mean, is that the current state of play, or, you know, from, because that's me looking from the outside in, or is there a little more kind of turmoil than meets the eye if you're kind of inside the camp?
No, it's not, there's nothing, you know, there's no turmoil whatsoever. There's no debt for the club. We've got a, you know, beautiful newish ground. It's going up to 10 years that they've been in it. And I alluded to it earlier about when they were playing at Don Valley Stadium, you know, they'd got points deductions galore, you know, kicked out of the home ground Millmore, which I'm not sure if Sunderland fans will have experienced going down that narrow walkway alongside the ground. No, definitely not. They're in such a strong position. And the thing is, you know, you get a lot of players that want to come here because they know that they're going to, you know, further their career. If you look at likes of, like, you know, Kiefer Moore, who was... he came in on loan from Ipswich. Mick McCarthy weren't having him, and then he ended up being, you know, the main striker for Mick McCarthy at Cardiff. You know, there's Will Vaux as well, came in from north of the border, sold on to Cardiff. Shemi Ajayi as well, sold on to West Brom, playing in the Premier League, and there were even talk of West Ham signing him in the summer as well. And what Paul Warren does is he actually tries to put these players off signing for him, because he says, look, I'm going to work you. You're going to be the fittest you've ever been. You know, I'm going to make you basically throw up in pre-season, and you're going to be the fittest that you've ever been. I'm going to improve you every single day. Are you sure you still want to come? And, you know, I think invariably they say, yeah, I do. But why wouldn't they really want to come and play at a club that, you know, that you will improve at, and got a, you know, decent training facilities, you know, really nice ground, you know, and certainly at this level they've got a real good chance at bouncing straight back up.
Yeah, you got us all nostalgic there, because I was thinking about Millmore, and I'm sure it was about 99-2000, because it was in our, you know, Peter Reid, Phillips, Quinn days. I'm sure we had Rotherham in the cup, third round of the FA Cup, I think. And I think we won, I can't remember, it might have been 5-0 or something. Or it might have been 1-0. I can't remember, but we won. But I remember that day, and I remember Millmore. But I drive past the New York Stadium, you know, quite often. And it's a stunning ground, because it's on the side of a main road. And when you drive past it, it's sunken down out on its own. And for kind of this level, building it there, I mean, it's a cracking little stadium they've got.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, it's, let's not forget the hosting the, I think it's the Women's Euros.
Yeah.
I think it's next year. Everyone will have to look that up and see if I'm totally wrong. But they have hosted, like, you know, internationals and youth internationals before as well. It's a cracky stadium. And the pitch is amazing as well. It was good at Millmore, to be fair. But the ground staff as well, they've won quite a few awards with how, you know, well kept the pitches as well. So I think, you know, Sunderland fans have already tasted it, haven't they, in pre-season. Pretty close game, weren't it? But no, it'll be, there's a lot more riding on it this time around, isn't there?
Yeah. We'll come on to that. But yeah, I mean, I was looking, as you said, you know, they've had a good history last few years of transfers, bringing players in, selling them for more money, which is a bizarre concept to Sunderland, because we haven't done that for the last probably 10, 15 years or something. But obviously, looking at the players who came in during the summer transfer window, my first impression, just looking at the list, there doesn't seem to have been as many as most clubs who we kind of do these kind of previews with. Most other clubs have got a list as long as your arm, especially, you know, looking at the likes of Ipswich and all that, they've brought in kind of 20, 30, 30 players. Yeah. But, I mean, before we get on to all that, you did take Will Grigg on loan from us on deadline day, I think it was. Well, last 10 minutes of deadline day, I think it was. So how's he getting on this season?
Yeah, he's done all right. I think he's got 4 goals. Depending on whether this goes out after tomorrow night's game, if he plays and scores against Man City's under-23s or under-21s, whatever it is. He's had to get up to speed. I think as soon as he signed, I thought, well, he'll probably need 10 games to get up to speed, you know, get air in his lungs and get up to the Paul Warne way, really, because they defend from the front. And if you're going to play up front alongside Michael Smith, this is a strike partnership, by the way, which is loved by Sunderland, because you've got Will Grigg and Michael Smith, who's a big Newcastle fan, so they'd love it. If you do as much, you know, if you're going to play up front alongside Michael Smith, you've got to match his work rate, because he's absolutely phenomenal. A real colossus up front for Rotherham United. But it did take him a couple of games to get up to speed. You know you're going to get goals at this level, though, with Will Grigg. It might not have been the case and not worked out for him up at Sol, but there is a goal scorer in there. And I think there's been times where Rotherham have said, if we'd just had a goal scorer, if we just had someone to pop up at back stick and someone just to finish that. And he scored a couple of his goals have been from like 1 yard out, because he just reacted quickest and poached it, and scored a good header as well a couple of games back. Played against his old club at the weekend, and MK Dons put in a good shift. I think Paul Warne really likes him. And he's chipped in with a few goals, and it will be a miss on Saturday. I think there's two options that Rotherham could replace him with, and that's the only sort of mild concern, really, is that there isn't a plethora of strikers. There's Joshua Coyote, a young lad, and Freddie Ladapo as well, who came off the bench to score against MK Dons. I suspect it's going to be Freddie that'll start, who is also a goal scorer at this level. So he will be a threat, but then you've got Joshua Coyote to come on as well. So Rotherham are, you know, losing one of the first team players, really, for this weekend's fixture. But I think the fans have taken to him. They're just desperate to sing that song, aren't they?
Yeah, we've been waiting for quite a few years to sing that song. Never quite got around to it. It's interesting, actually, just listening to that, because one of his people gave him criticism for was actually his work rate in some ways. He didn't look as if he wanted it at times. So it'd be interesting to see how he gets on for the rest of the season. But you mentioned Newcastle as well. And I also noticed that Shane Ferguson came in from Millwall on a free transfer. And he's 30 now, which I couldn't quite get my head around, because I remember him coming in, you know, through the ranks at Newcastle, and he was quite highly rated for quite a few years. So how's he settled into life at Rotherham?
He's done well. I think he's had a couple of little niggles. He started at the weekend against MK Dons, and he's been playing in a wing-back position, which I would argue is probably the most difficult position for my humble, my humble grounding in football, you know, because you've got to be expected to get up there and attack. You've got to be expected to get up there and attack, aren't you, and provide for your strikers. And then you've got to be back there, aren't you, and helping out and defend first and foremost. It's really tough. You've got to have a lot in your legs. As you say, at 30 years old, you could argue he's probably, you know, maybe at his peak, he maybe not be as quick as what he was, but technically really good. He put in a beautiful cross for Will Grigg, actually, two Northern Irish internationals combining for Will Grigg's header that he scored a few home games ago. So he has got great technical abilities. Probably more to come from him. But we saw as well, he scored an absolute rocket for Northern Ireland about a month ago or so. I can't remember who it was against, but it's just one of those that sits nicely and he just smacked it from 35 yards, just arrowed right into the top corner. So he has got a terrific left foot. But I know what you mean when you look at these players and you think, he's 30. I'm like, where's my life going? Some of these players I've seen are born in like 2001. I'm like, I'm definitely not going to make it now, am I?
Yeah, it scares the life out of me. But yeah, I noticed, because I saw he'd had a few injuries over the years, and it's interesting, because I think, you know, maybe if he hadn't had the injuries, he might have played a bit higher. But yeah, that was a bit of a blast from the past, got us a bit frightened about my age earlier on. But there was a few more. There wasn't, like I said, the list wasn't extensive, but you had Edmunds Green from Huddersfield on loan, Oliver Rathbone from Rochdale. So which of the other new signings are impressing this season?
Well, I think if Ollie Rathbone gets another home man of the match, he'll have to build a couple of new shelves, because it's getting a bit boring, really, in getting man of the match every game. Yeah, he's been probably the standout player in terms of his effort and endeavour. He's just absolutely everywhere. He always impressed me for Rochdale, him and Callum Camps. Rochdale always seemed to find these you know, little gem midfield players. And yeah, I'm a big fan of Ollie Rathbone, very tenacious, loves the tackle. He's absolutely everywhere. He's like a little terrier, and he's just absolutely everywhere. And it's strange to think, because maybe it's even more relevant to to you as a Sunderland fan or Sunderland fans in general. You might sort of turn your nose up if you're thinking, well, are we going to sign someone really from a team that's been relegated into the fourth division? You know, is he really going to improve us? Mm. When you've sort of got to be a little bit clever and actually take a few steps back and think, you know what, yeah, he will. And he's been a real sort of revelation in that three-man midfield for him. Just hope that, you know, he stays injury-free and, he continues, because he's got his best years ahead of him. Still got plenty more to come. And I think he's one of a few of the Rotherham United players that will be able to cut it at Championship level in the right team.
Wow. Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because we did exactly that. We signed last season in January, we signed Carl Winchester from Forest Green. And I think a lot of Sunderland fans went, you know, Forest Green, what, you know, who's this fella? And this season he's played at right back, kind of out. Well, a lot of people thought he was a centre midfielder out of position. Mm. He's been a revelation at full back, absolutely superb. But in terms of Oliver Rathbone, like you said, he's only 24, signed him from Rochdale. Just out of interest, I saw the fee was undisclosed, but do you know roughly how much they kind of would have spent on Rathbone?
In all honesty, I've got plausible deniability on that, because I've got absolutely no idea. I could probably offer you a bit more insight into Winchester, to be honest. In all honesty, I went to... He played against Barnsley for Oldham when Barnsley, we pinched Lee Johnson off Oldham and went back to Oldham. I think we tonked them like 3-0, which the locals weren't really happy. But standout player for me were Winchester. I thought, I hope John O goes in and we can nick him. And I remember chatting to him about him. And he were a big fan of Liam Kelly as well. I think he wanted to bring him in. But I really like Winchester. And I saw he'd gone to Forest Green. It really surprised me. I thought, what's he gone there for? But then when I saw, you know, John O had signed him again, I thought, yeah, I know why. He has got ability. But again, you sort of turn your nose up at it, don't you? Think, oh, we're Sunderland. We're you're thinking like recent years, you know, Jermaine Defoe's and that. Why are we signing this? But I think it's safe to say you've got to a stage now where there aren't really any bad eggs anymore. You know, everyone wants to be there. Everyone wants to do well and improve. So that's sort of showing into in in the table and you run a form.
Yeah. Well, I can confirm it definitely feels like a lifetime since we had Jermaine Defoe at some point. I can assure you that. But I was also looking at the outgoings and I saw Matt Crooks joined Middlesbrough. And because the reason I asked about Rathbone, because undisclosed fees really annoy me. It never used to be like that. You always knew how much a player went for. Anyway, that's just me, a gripe that I've got. But about modern football. But for this, I found that it was about £1 million that he left for. I mean, was that a blow to lose Crooks in the summer? And actually, it's funny. I mean, with that sort of money coming in, did people kind of expect more signings to come in because you got that sort of money?
I'm not too sure. You've sort of got to take into account the loss of revenue as well, and you're getting relegated from the Championship. I'm not sure if it's between, you know, £5 to £7 million these days, which is such a lot of money. And it was a difficult one with Crooksy because he was worth, as is the case with quite a few of the players, he was worth more to Rotherham than what he would have commanded in a transfer fee, if that makes any sense.
You
show me where you can get a 6'5", box-to-box, fitness freak that chips in with goals and he can play. He's played centre-half for Rotherham, centre-mid, striker, and they just wouldn't, you know, just couldn't command such a fee, which, you know, to Rotherham, he's probably worth £10 million, but they're never going to get £10 million for him. Mm. But he's a lad that sort of, I could say this about any of the players as well, to be fair, that he's a lad that deserved the move. And, you know, it's a bit of a life-changing move for him going up to Borough. Nice for him to score against Barnsley as well and celebrate in front of us on Wednesday night. That was lovely. he's sort of been replaced by the diminutive Ollie Rathbone. And there's probably about a foot and a half of difference between them two. But I think all the Rotherham fans are sort of pleased for Crooksy. You know, he gave his all in his time at the club. If you think how sort of clever the recruitment is, if you'd have asked me those fans who they wanted to sign at that time when we were in the Championship, no one would have said Matt Crooks from Northampton. And he's come in and bettered himself, bettered the team, helped him get promoted. Sadly, just couldn't help him stay up because it was so close again last season, so close. And he does deserve his move. And I think that they'll be relatively content that they've got Ollie Rathbone in as his replacement, if you like. Not like for like, but he's in that central midfield role and works just as hard.
Yeah. So we talked about the kind of the business that they got done, and we've talked about the nature of the last five seasons, up, down, up, down, up, down, between the Championship and League One. So, I mean, before the season kicked off, is it just kind of easy to assume that was the expectation at the start of the season to bounce straight back up? And, I mean, has the success at getting back constantly at the first attempt, does that increase pressure on one to do it again?
I think that's sort of human nature, isn't it? It's sort of once that precedent is set, you know, the two times one is managed Rotherham in League One, they've got promoted. So third time you're thinking, he's going to do it again. But as I said earlier about that, you know, like that Premier League Two, if you look at League One, the size of the clubs now, you know, yourselves, Pompey, Ipswich, Sheffield Wednesday, there's some massive clubs in this division. It's just getting harder and harder to get out of it. And then you've got clubs like under the radar, like your Wickhams, who I know you guys beat, didn't you? But they came and did a job at New York and got a 0-0 draw. Who, you know, it's weird because you wouldn't necessarily pick any of their players to play in your team, but there's just such a well-oiled, well-drilled outfit, and it's so obvious that Gareth Ainsworth's been there for so long because everyone knows what they're doing. So I think it's a really sort of tough league, and the fact that I think that, you know, your lads have sort of embraced that and given Lee Johnson the job, you know, and you're allowing him to sign players that he knows can do a job in this division and have that, you know, longer term vision rather than, we need to get out of this division as quickly as we can. Let's chuck as much money as we can in every direction and try and get out. There's a lot more sort of long term thinking going on at your club. But yeah, there are a few big clubs in this division. It just seems to get harder every year. So I think the expectation is there, you know, generally what clubs fans wouldn't say they're going to finish in top six, no matter what, you know, you've got to aim for that, aren't you? And I think certainly with the start that they've made as well, I like to think that, you know, that they'll be there or thereabouts, because I've not really seen anyone that they've come up against that I've thought, oh, they've been outplayed there. You know, they've just been Turnkey Dons who were really sort of fancied and possession-based. Rotherham didn't give them a minute and smashed them 3-0.
Just going back to that expectation and the fans, I mean, with going up and down, are the fans almost kind of, have they got an acceptance of the club's level, or is there sometimes an element of frustration that it just can't make that next step?
Yeah, it's always going to be frustrating, but there's so much financial clout in the Championship. And you've probably genuinely got maybe 12 to 15 teams that really fancy getting promoted. And the elite in that second division as well, second tier, you know, they're paying out like tens of thousands of pounds up to the 100 mark, aren't they, for some of these players. And there are clubs that just simply can't compete with that. So I think there is a dose of realism really for certain so-called smaller clubs, if you like. I think all they care about, having endured what they have done at Rotherham, is having players that care and a manager that cares and shows that on the touchline, because they've suffered in the past, you know, with employees that just haven't really been bothered and are here for one last payday, as you know full well. And it's so clear all the lads really want to do well for themselves and for Warnie. And you, I said it before, it is such a pleasure to sort of be a part of, because there just is a connection there. There really is. And it's not a case of, oh, we are Rotherham United, we have to do community work. Rotherham United is the community. And, you know, they do so much locally, the players, and they understand and accept and relish, you know, doing the the extra work, if you like, in and around the community. First and foremost, yeah, they've got to perform. Sometimes it's out of your control when you're coming up against Jack Grealish, who it was like 18 months before he went for 100 million quid playing against the Millers, which were fun. you know, and last season, like it were Watford came and they had, I think they had Sarr on wing. I'm thinking this is absolutely crazy. I think there were like 12 different like internationals from 12 different countries in that team. I'm like, this is absolutely crazy. But you know, it's not for a lack of trying from Rotherham United. Trust me, they really are playing for Paul Warren. And I just don't think I could not see anyone else in that dugout at the minute for him. I really, really couldn't.
Yeah, funny. We did the same thing with a guy from Wickham, and he said on the way down he was topping it up the cost of the Watford team compared to Wickham team, and but yeah, I mean, going into the results, it wasn't actually the best of the kind of starts to the season. First six games, 3 wins, 3 defeats, but then since then, Rotherham are unbeaten in 8 in League One, which stretches back to the 14th of September. So, I mean, did something change, or was it just time for the kind of new signings to gel and kind of get together?
Yeah, I think, you know, like any team really, you can't really tell, can you, what your best 11 is in pre-season to start off with. There's not been like wholesale changes for them. And it's sort of all glued together by the evergreen Richard Wood at the back. I always felt defensively that, you know, they were going to be sound. It was just like in that final third, are they going to be sticking the chances away? And it has sort of, I'm going to say it has sort of clicked, but it's not like anything went, you know, drastically wrong to begin with. But I still feel there's more to come from them as well. I genuinely do. There's been a couple of weird games where I thought we played better against, you know, this team that we lost to than we did today, and you know, yet won 4-1 against Pompey. So they played played well against them, but scored 3 goals in 7 minutes and just blitzed them. Just were so clinical. So there have been a couple of strange games. Plymouth won as well, start of the season, beat them 2-0. And then Plymouth are suddenly sitting pretty top of the league. I thought I didn't think anything from them at all.
Yeah.
By all accounts, they've had the rub of the green as well with like certain decisions. Mm. And Pompey as well against you guys, that were an absolute disgrace of a quagmire. Could have happened to anyone really, losing that
Plymouth
one.
Plymouth did the same thing, didn't they, the week after?
Yeah, I think you needed some armbands on, didn't you, to be honest?
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
But yeah, and then they come up to New York and Rob, it were pretty close. You know, Rotherham smashed them 4-1 and they pretty much sort of gave a goal away as well, but still like showed great character to go up the other end and score three in like, something like 7 minutes, which were it was just amazing, really. And they probably played... it was a difficult game against Wickham, another team that sort of fancied. I thought they were just as good, but they just couldn't break them down. So I think, you know, I was worried about the sort of, well, not so much worried, maybe a little bit concerned about the final third. But, you know, Michael Smith's got 10 goals, Griggs come in and got 4. You know, there's a couple of players chipping in and 3 different scorers on against MK Dons as well at the weekend. So they have sort of, it has sort of clicked, if you like, but I do feel there's more to come from them.
Yeah. And I mean, with that really good run, like we talked about, I mean, they're currently sitting fifth in League One, 3 points behind the automatic promotion spots, kind of really good run, got back into it. And we talked about, you know, Paul Warren over these last kind of 5 years doing a fantastic job. Is there always a slight concern that a championship club might just go, hang on, that fella's done a fantastic job at Rotherham.
we don't think about
make
that.
Him an offer he can't refuse.
No, we don't think about that. I think, if Daniel Farker's in trouble at Carrow Road, which you know he could well be considering their start to the season, I think that's the only job that Warnie would consider being a Norwich
really?
Fan. No, I think
I'll hold you to that mind.
Different budget. I genuinely think he's happy, and it's a strange one because he didn't want the job to begin with, and he's become, you know, from a fitness coach who did his, you know, teaching qualifications and started his professional career relatively late in his early 20s. You know, he's become a really well respected manager, and he carries himself so well, and he comes across, I'm going to say he comes across well, but that's just what he is. And, you know, even when, like, you know, all the, when the video press conferences and newspaper interviews have all finished, he'll stop and chat for like another 10 minutes and be like, oh, what did you think of this? What did you think of that? And he's never disingenuous. He's not trying to be too clever. It doesn't overcomplicate things, and yet he leaves no stone unturned, and everyone's like really sort of prepared. Rotherham United is Paul Warren, and Paul Warren is Rotherham United. I've no doubt about that. I know that's like ultra cliche cheese, but no, it's just been so. It's funny because I started there when Warren started as like caretaker boss. So his tenure and mine has been mirrored. I think he's been more successful than me, though.
So what I'll take from that kind of longer answer than I expected was it's a huge concern that an offer will come in. but in terms of Saturday's game, like, you know, we talked about the run that they're on. I imagine Rotherham are kind of full of confidence going into the game. They've won 4 and lost 2 out of the 8 at the New York Stadium so far this season. So do you think, in terms of their approach, are they just going to, do they come out of the blocks and are they going to take the game to Sunderland?
Yeah, I think there isn't a game this season that they won't do that, home or away. Mm. They just will. You know, applying that really intense press, which, you know, MK Dons couldn't cope with. And from what I understand, Charlton deployed that at the weekend, and I know they were enjoying the just gotten rid of the manager syndrome, which, you know, many clubs fall afoul against that, don't they? So it might have been a bit of a blip for your lads, because your run's been amazing. But I don't think, you know, Warney's going to think, oh, you know, we'll hold back a bit. I think it's going to be refreshing to see after the last home game, both sides going for it, because Wickham came to do a job, and, you know, Gareth Ainsworth came into the press room at the end and just went, job done. And I don't think Lee Johnson's going to be doing that this weekend, is he? Yeah. I think we're going to see a cracking game in front of a full house, which is, you know, really holds its noise really well. It's going to be a terrific atmosphere, and hopefully we're going to see a few goals and a real corker.
Yeah. Well, I mean, speaking of goals, Michael Smith's on 9 goals, same as Ross Stewart, both kind of flying this season. Is it obvious to say that, you know, Michael Smith's going to be the one that Lee Johnson is preparing for? He's the danger man, or if you've got some other kind of people we should be aware of?
Well, yeah, they have started, like, chipping in with goals from around the park, really, because Richard Wood scored against Pompey from a set piece, Michael Iekwa scored from a well-worked set piece, MK Dons. Yes, Smith's got 9 league, 10 for the season. And I think you've got to say he's the danger man. He's probably the player of the season so far. He's just turned 30. He's a, you know, diehard magpie. He'll be desperate to score on Saturday, trust me. He was getting some grief off at Portsmouth fans, having played there a few seasons back, and he stuck one in right in front of him. he really enjoyed that. He actually scored against Newcastle as well in pre-season, in front of his friends and family. So that were class for him. But again, he's another recruit, you know, from under the radar. They needed to replace Kiefer Moore, who were on loan from Ipswich. He was doing so well that Barnsley signed him. And to replace him, they went, where else do you go to look for a player than Bury Reserves? That's where they went. And got him on a free transfer from Bury, or a nominal fee. And he's come in and been an absolute revelation, an absolute workhorse. Chips in with goals. I think it's one of his best returns so far at this level. And he runs the channels really well, graphs, and he's a real sort of handful. And I can't look beyond really him if I had to pick one player to be like the sort of... Maybe Chidozie Ogbeni as well, who's been playing at wing back. He's, you know, he's really dangerous because he can really stretch you with his pace. So I'm hopeful that he can provide one for Smudge on Saturday.
Yeah. Well, since you've said a couple of times he's a Newcastle fan, which I wasn't aware of, you know, I think after this podcast he might get more stick on Saturday than he might have before. But
I know. I think provided a bit of ammunition there, aren't I, as well? Can I throw Dan Barlasser under the bus as well? Because he's a Newcastle lad as well. He's another top player, to be fair. He's like the quarterback, if you like, for Rotherham. He can really land it on a postage stamp for you. Such a great range of passing, and he puts in some unbelievable corners and free kicks with such a trajectory on him that are just really difficult to defend. So he's another top player that they've done really well to recruit.
Well, like I said, I mean, it's the game's a complete sellout, and I know from the amount of people I see still asking if anyone's got tickets for sale from a Sunderland point of view, I think we probably could have sold out the whole of the ground with just away fans on Saturday. But it's also a sellout for the home fans, so it's not as if kind of Sunderland, there's empty seats in there. It's a complete sellout. Two clubs sitting fourth and fifth. It's just got a feel of a huge game. I mean, it's certainly from a Sunderland perspective, but I imagine from a Rotherham one as well. But, you know, one that could have repercussions further down the line if either team kind of gives ground away. But, I mean, is there a big buzz around the game in Rotherham? Is it one that they know that this is a big one coming up?
Yeah, I think so, because this is like one of a cluster of games that's, you know, they've played Portsmouth, Wickham, and then MK Dons. And everyone was saying, oh, let's, you know, we've beaten Wimbledon at home. You know, let's see where we are after these games. That's what everyone's saying. And I know the yardstick, I suppose, is the midway point where you've played everybody once and you sort of know what everybody's looking like, what sort of shape they're in. But yeah, there is, you know, this game, everyone's been looking forward to it. And let's be fair, most teams in this division will have looked at the fixture list and seen Sunderland and think, oh, can't wait to go up to the stadium alight. You know, it's a relatively new ground. You know, I know you were up in 97, 98, whatever, but, you know, relatively new ground and a big stadium with great atmosphere and a big club. Everyone's desperate to play a team like Sunderland, aren't they? And I think it'll be no different for Rotherham this weekend. But the fact that, like you said, both teams are in such rich veins of form, and you know, it's not going to be it's not going to be a chess match, is it? I think we're going to see a real good bout this weekend.
And for that reason, actually, I'm not going to ask for a prediction on the game It's just a toss of a coin. As you said, you touched on it there. It's going to have it's going to feel like a cup tie, I think, on Saturday. Mm-hmm. But what I will do, you know, for the season ahead, considering the position Rotherham are in now. I suppose a couple of points on that. I mean, firstly, would the playoffs be a disappointment if that was how they ended up, looking at how they're sitting at this stage in the season? And would you predict that they are going to occupy one of those top two spots at the end of the season?
Well, I thought this the other night. I think whoever finishes above Wickham will get promoted, because Wickham will just, like, strong arm their way to promotion.
Again.
Yeah. Will finishing the playoffs be a disappointment for Rotherham? I don't think so, you know, because there were a few people sort of concerned of a hangover from the disappointment of coming so close to staying up last season. I don't know if you guys know what happened, but the last game of the season, bearing in mind what were happening to Derby, it was like, during that last game, it were a case of, they were down, they were staying up, and they were down again. May have even took a couple of more twists and turns during that time. So a crazy game between Derby and Sheffield Wednesday. So everyone was sort of worried that, oh no, that's going to be it. We're going to really struggle to recover from this. But Warne is so enthusiastic and infectious. You just can't write him off. You just cannot write Rotherham United off at all. And you'll struggle to find a fitter team in this division, you know, than Rotherham United, because as an ex-fitness coach and someone who he really prided himself on his fitness, because he himself said he was a player of limited ability. I'm not sure if he's being self-deprecating there, but he still prides himself on his fitness now, and he loves to run with the lads. So they've got to make sure that they are super fit. So, you know, there'll not be any teams that outrun Rotherham United. So I like to think that, you know, Millers fans would really appreciate them finishing in the top six. And I wouldn't be surprised to not that I'm putting pressure on them at all. I've really got to think about this answer. But it wouldn't surprise me to see them finishing in the top two, to be honest with you. Mm.
Yeah, I just had you were talking about the last day of the season. I had a big smile on my face, and it wasn't because of Rotherham. It's just because all my in-laws are Sheffield Wednesday fans. And I tried in vain to not laugh hysterically on the last day of the season, but I was quite pleased that they came down to join us in League One. But it was an epic day.
Well, the thing is, it's like my best mate's an owl, my in laws are owls, my brother in law's Donny, my other best mate's a blade. I've got Millers fans mates, and obviously a Barnsley fan family. So it's like, we had Sheffield Wednesday fans watching by whatever means when Rotherham were playing them earlier in the season, and I think I got a little bit of stick off of them. But I'm thinking, believe me, when I get home, I'm going to get some stick. Never mind what you guys are saying about me.
Yeah, it was a bit of a ridiculous day, but like I said, I drive past the New York Stadium quite regularly, so I'm gutted to be missing out, because it's half term and I'm away with the kids, so I'm absolutely gutted at that. But because of that, I hope Sunderland get all 3 points in a really horrible, stinking game, and the weather's really bad, you know, because I'm not bitter on missing out or anything like that. But I've got a feeling it's going to be a cracker, like you touched on anyway. But on that note of self-pity, I'd just like to say thank you very much, Matt. Absolutely cracking to catch up, and all the best for the season ahead, mate.
No, cheers, man. I appreciate it. You know, it's a well-revered podcast, so you know, you guys do such a good job of representing your club, and I think my career's peaked now, definitely.
Well, I do appreciate that, and because of that, a quick reminder for people to check out Daydream Believers, cracking documentary, and if you want to feed any nostalgia for 90s football, It's definitely, like I do on a daily basis, it's definitely worth a look. But thanks again, Matt. Really appreciate it, mate.
Cheers, mate. Thank you.
Cheers. And thanks again for listening. Keep a lookout, Roker Report, for all the build-up ahead of the game against Rotherham on Saturday and all of the reaction after the final whistle, as usual. And I'm sure another podcast will be dropping very soon. But from us, it's bye for now.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.